So we're live in the Channel 9 studios. Clint Wyckoff, Dave Kowola.
Why are we here?
Yep, we're going to talk about a little bit of hyper-converged, right?
Interview with an MVP.
Talking about hyper-converged solutions.
Coming to you live from Channel 9 studios.
In Redmond. Redmond, Washington, Channel 9.
Yes.
This is the real deal.
Interview
with an MVP.
We have been asked a lot of questions from our viewers about hyper-converged technologies. And specifically, there's been a lot of interest that's been coming from our viewers around Storage Spaces Direct and Microsoft's new hyper-converged platform that they're coming out with. And this really is starting to become, you know, less of kind of an industry buzzword that's out there.
It is a
reality.
There's a lot of vendors that have come out with solutions. You know, there's some bigger names in the industry that address this hyper-converged market and have really, you know, brought things to market initially, right? So there's, you know, the whole concept of hyper-converged is where you're running the hypervisor, you know, whether that's on top of vSphere or on top of Hyper-V. So you have all of your compute, your storage, your networking.
I'm losing my voice.
All right. So we're fortunate enough, as Dave mentioned, that's what we're going to be chatting about today, and he's going to kind of give us a demo, right?
Yeah, for sure. And so I think one of the real key things to look at here is that hyper-converged infrastructure can really simplify your data center. It does have some specific use cases that it's very, very handy for right now. Like, for example, VDI. Mm-hmm. VDI is a really big use case where, you know, hyper-converged infrastructure just makes a lot of sense.
Or even remote branch offices where there's limited staff and, you know, just
limited rack space.
Yep, simple and easy to deploy, right?
Yep.
So what are you going to show us?
Well, so what I'm going to show you today is I've actually been lucky enough to be given some demo gear from a hyper-converged vendor. GridStore.
Oh.
And so they've actually given me access to their lab environment in Mountain View, California.
Okay.
And so what I've got the ability to do is actually kind of show off, you know, what it is that this is this hyper-converged infrastructure. So what we're going to be on is we're going to be on a 2U chassis. It's got four nodes inside of it.
So four
Hyper-V nodes. And when those got shipped from the factory, Clint, those were actually shipped pre-installed with Windows Server 2012 R2.
Okay.
And when 2016 goes GA, they will, I guess, ship with 2016. So you'll have your choice as to what you want them to build at the factory for you. But it comes pre-installed with the operating system. It comes fully patched. It comes with the Hyper-V role pre-installed. It comes with failover clustering pre-installed as well.
Wow.
So the only thing that you really have to do when you take one of these hyper-converged boxes that everybody's been talking about, when it arrives on your dock, is you unbox it, you rack and stack it, turn it on, just have to give it an IP address. Sounds familiar to our nano session, right? So you just have to give it an IP address, give the computer a name, and you just have to join it to the domain.
I was going to say, add it to the domain, create the cluster, or add it to an existing cluster that you've
exactly.
got out there.
Yep. And those are just a couple things that they can't do in the factory, right?
Right.
Because they're not going to know what your domain name is
and stuff like that.
But
you want to take care of all that on your own.
Those last few steps are pretty trivial. And so when you look at the actual configuration to either initially form your Hyper-V cluster or, you know, join another machine to the Hyper-V cluster, it's a matter of minutes, and that activity is done.
Because if you think about traditional, you know, I got to go out and procure servers, then I got to make sure that I got storage or carve up existing storage, present it to it. Sounds like this is pretty simple solution to deploy, right? So like my return on investment, right, is pretty quick.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before we jump into the demo, I want to talk a little bit about your existing infrastructure that you would have seen in the data center, because this is a big pain point that a lot of people have when it comes to understanding this new term, hyper-converged. And by the way, I'm actually going to announce something. Not supposed to announce this, but I'm going to announce it. I'm going to announce it for you.
The viewers.
And you, my friend.
What's going on? What do you got?
I have a book.
You have a book?
I have a new book coming out.
Another one?
Yes. It just actually went through, first five chapters just went through editorial this morning. I actually have the cover. I can actually show you the cover
Doesn't
of the book
have,
later.
Like E.T. like?
Yeah, I don't know about that picture. So we're still trying to figure out the cover art. So this is the problem that you run into when you're an IT provocateur, such as myself.
Okay.
What, is that
no artistic skills?
I have no artistic skills, and so I'll write the book, but then it takes like 6 months to figure out the front cover. So I got 5 chapters that are actually written. It's going to be released free.
It's an ebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
Completely free.
Completely free. And so guess what it's going to be on?
Hyperconverged.
Hyperconverged infrastructure. All the things that you're going to need to know. So I'm just going to give you kind of a sneak peek as to what some of these pieces are. So I'm really jazzed about this because I started writing the book back in, I think it was June or July of this year. And it actually came together quite quickly. And then the unfortunate reality is that life kicks in and
I'm stuck at
chapter 5. So
how many chapters do you have to go?
I think we have like 17 chapters slated. So
wow.
So what we're doing is...
Who are you authoring it with?
So I'm authoring it with GridStore.
Okay.
So GridStore is actually helping me because it's actually very difficult to self-publish a book.
Mm-hmm.
So they're helping me with the editorial resources, the technical writers and stuff like that.
Got it.
Because anybody that's been around me knows that
I can't write.
My phonetics aren't necessarily that great. So I can put the general construct in there. And then
you end every sentence with like A.
Yes.
And you take the U out of about and it's a boot.
Exactly. And I end every sentence with an apostrophe. So that's the key to this industry, is that you have to surround yourself with really smart people.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. I get really good technical writers to help me.
So you're a subject matter expert when it comes to hyperconverged, and you're going to give us a live demo.
Yes.
On the GridStore storage appliance, Hyper-V setup, and
absolutely.
Is the lab ready?
I think we are actually ready to go.
Let's switch it over.
Yep. So I'm pretty sure that the viewers out there should be able to now see our screen. And Clint, as I'm going through the demonstration, you know, you can feel free to ask any questions that you would have, all right? So as we take a look at the configuration here, this is our user interface that the GridStore provides to us. And the user interface is called Grid Control. Now, the first and most important thing about the Grid Control UI is that it's completely written using REST API.
Oh, okay.
So what that means for any developers that are out there is that this UI and anything you see inside of here can be consumed by anything. So if you wanted to write a custom PowerShell module, if you wanted to write some extensions into SCOM, if you wanted to do anything, you can do this. And so the important part about this is that we're actually extending our UI with some other third-party vendors. So for example, Five9 writes a product called Five9 Manager for Hyper-V.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually show up in their manager as a tab. So you can manage all your GridStore storage by using Five9 Manager.
That's
all because this is all written and actually consumes all of its own REST APIs.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the first and most important thing whenever you're looking at a technology, a hyper-converged technology like this, is if I come over to the Manage tab, I want to just bring you guys down to the Upgrade Grid option. Because this is software-defined storage, it's really important that you're able to support a rolling upgrade. Because as you can imagine, I'm running my critical workloads on here.
Right.
Taking outages in there are just not acceptable. So the GridStore grid will actually provide a rolling upgrade path for you, so you don't have to actually take any outages of any of your infrastructure.
That's cool.
when upgrades come. Because, you know, we're on 3.5 today. Mm-hmm. It's software, so it could be 3.6, 3.7, 4, 5, 10.
Right, as new features and things come available.
Down the road, exactly. Yep. And so they actually have a new version that's going to be coming out, version 3.6, that's adding a lot of really cool performance tabs. I just unfortunately didn't have access to that particular unit.
So tell me
today.
A little bit about the controller on the backside, right? Since it's hyper-converged, it's got the compute as well as the storage.
It does. And so how GridStore does this is through a process called a resource controller. And so there's two really important constructs that you have to understand with GridStore, Clint. Number one is they have what's called a resource controller. And the resource controller is nothing more than a kernel mode driver that they have that actually forms the grid. And that's really the glue and the secret sauce in behind what they're doing. Now, the nice thing is it's not a SIF share.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an SMB share. So like on a scale-out file server, it's not NFS. It's not iSCSI. It's not Fibre Channel. It actually lives just above the hypervisor as a kernel driver.
Okay.
And so what's important with that is you get maximum performance coming through the stack. So in this unit that I was just showing you there, You can get over 200,000 I/O off of a four-node configuration, and then that just expands accordingly. So if you added another four nodes, you would have another 200,000 I/O.
So is it all flash? Is it hybrid? Is it
Great question. So these units from GridStore are 100% all flash. And I personally, and you guys can quote me on this, I believe that spinning disk is going to be dead in the data center. And this is not a conversation of, oh, well, you know, in 2020, everybody's going to fly, you know, everybody's going to drive in flying cars. This is happening. And it's happening right in front of your eyes. If you haven't seen this today, most of your major SAN vendors have made significant investments into flash technology. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is you get better endurance, you get better performance, you get less draw on power, and you get less cooling requirements inside of your data center. So flash just makes all kinds of sense.
Right.
Performs better, it's cheaper to power, and it's cheaper to cool, right?
Plus the drive sizes of flash are getting much, much larger, so I can fit more capacity in a smaller footprint. And the price per gigabyte or even price per terabyte is becoming more in line with what you would see from traditional spinning disk.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing that I'll dispel a myth here is the fact that, you know, the larger the drive sizes that you go, the less, the shorter the endurance of the drives. And that's absolutely not true. So, for example, a 2 terabyte drive versus a 4 terabyte drive have exactly the same endurance ratios on them. And so just to put this in perspective, a 4 terabyte drive, the Samsung EMLC drives that GridStore puts into these units.
You just answered my next question, by the way.
Yo, so what do they use for the drives?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Consumer-based?
No, enterprise MLC drives, yep. And so basically the simple math that you have to do in your head is that every one of those drives can sustain 0.8 drive writes per day. So that means they can fill to 80% per day for 5 years, every day for 5 years. So if you took a look at a SAN that had like 100 terabytes, you could fill that SAN to like 80 terabytes every day for 5 years. And that's just inside the manufacturer spec. So one of the things that's interesting in the industry is that they're saying, well, people don't really do that to their SANs. So the lifespan of these SSD drives that are going to be inside of your data centers could actually span well beyond those 5 years and go 7 years, maybe 10 years. They don't know.
Right.
They've done some real studies with like companies like HP that were kind of early adopters and Fusion IO and companies like that, SanDisk. Mm-hmm. They've had the flash disks in the marketplace for quite some time. And they're just fine. And the fail ratio on these drives is not high at all.
Right.
In fact, at GridStore, we have yet to have a single drive, maybe one drive come back out of all the
arrays. So in a previous life, I worked for a hybrid storage array vendor, and we had phone home data coming back on a daily basis from all of our customers, and even some of the earliest customers that purchased, the initial boxes.
Yes.
Still had, no problems with drive failure. That was something that that was monitored via the phone home data. Does GridStore do anything like that? They receive auto support bundles and are kind of looking for these.
Absolutely.
Drive patterns and things.
Yeah, so we detect smart errors, and we'll have automatic notifications back to the support team for sure.
Cool.
And so but that raises a really interesting point, is that it's not just for what I'm showing you here today, it's actually kind of spanning cross-vendor as well. So it's not just, GridStore that was be seeing this, your other storage company that you were working for, same thing. And I've had the same discussions across many vendors.
Well, you'll hear, different vendors and manufacturers throw out FUD, fear, uncertainty, a doubt versus, using consumer grade ML flash drives.
Is that actually what that stands for?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was like Elmer FUD.
what's the difference between enterprise grade and consumer grade? And there really isn't that much of a difference at the end of the day.
Yeah.
All right.
So
ready to get back to
the demo? Let's get right into this. So. The next thing that I want to quickly show you is that there's been a lot of conversations, Clint, around storage QoS, especially, we've been having a lot of these discussions at the MVP Summit and at a lot of other industry events. So GridStore has fully supported quality of service on Hyper-V for quite some time. And so if we click on the Manage tab at the top and we go to quality of service, we'll notice that I've got three default tiers that are built here. And so the reason that you want to have quality of service in an all-flash array like this is that you almost have too much I/O. So it's not the problem of not enough, it's now I actually have too much.
Okay.
And so how I want to equate this to you is very simple. And this is for my dear friend and fellow MVP, Emil Cabot. And so one day he's going to watch this and he's going to love this analogy that I use. So this would be like Emil driving if he had a regular array, mm-hmm. it would be like him driving a Neon with 100 horsepower. But then he went to all flash. When he went to all flash, he had 1,000 horsepower Neon. Now, just because you have 1,000 horsepower Neon, you're probably going to be a little dangerous if you're driving on the road with 1,000 horsepower.
It's a Neon.
It is a Neon. So we probably want to dial that back to where it belongs, which is probably like 50 horsepower. And so we want to just really contain what we can actually do, because otherwise what will happen, it's like the wild west of I/O inside of your arrays, and we want to take and we want to kind of prevent that from happening. So, yeah. Emil?
That's for you.
That analogy is just for you. All right, so getting back to my demo, I may or may not have a tendency to digress on my demos a little bit. Okay, so let's take a look at the actual configuration that we've got here. So if I come over to my storage nodes here, we can see that I've got four nodes that are actually configured forming this grid right now. And it looks like I'm on the version 3.56825 version right now. So that's cool. So that's the latest GA version that GridStore actually has. And inside of here, I can actually see the volumes or the vStores that are actually attached. So in GridStore speak, we call a volume a vStore.
Okay.
And if that was fiber channel speak, it would be a LUN, would be equivalent to like a volume in iSCSI. Mm-hmm. Same thing for us as a vStore.
Okay.
So that's just so that we're all on the same page, so that when I go through the UI and present this, it's going to make sense.
Now, just real quick about the UI. Is this, are you logged into a management server, or is this a console that you have installed somewhere?
You can do either. I'm actually right on the server right now, but you can take and you can do this remotely as well.
Okay.
And so we fully support integration with System Center Virtual Machine Manager through mm-hmm. storage management providers. I'm just actually showing the UI here because a lot of people may not actually have System Center today.
VMM, right.
Yeah, System Center Virtual Machine Manager. Okay, so let's go through the process. And this is actually a pretty powerful demo that that I'll show to people when they look at the grid. Is when it comes time to provisioning space inside of your data center, it can typically be a little challenging, right? So for example, Clint, do you understand how iSCSI is provisioned?
Yeah, you create a volume, or a LUN, you present that to the host, whether you're using an in-guest iSCSI provider or if you're using a hardware, initiator type thing, right?
Exactly. So there's some work to do on the array, right? So first of all, you'll have to carve out some space.
Yep.
So that's typically called creating a volume on the actual array or a LUN, depending on if you're fiber channel, right? And then you'll have to secure it. So the ACLs, the access control list, you'll have to lock it down.
To read and write.
So in iSCSI, you can do that through an iSCSI IQN.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that through an IP address.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that through, I forget what the third one is in there.
CHAP,
that's what it is. And inside of a fiber channel, you would do it through a process called zoning.
Yep.
And so we would take the WWN, which would be
of
like
the HBA.
Exactly.
And you would zone that LUN to that HBA or group of HBAs. That way you know which nodes of your Hyper-V environment have access to those LUNs that you've presented out.
Okay, exactly. And so in GridStore speak, we call that a virtual controller.
Okay.
So the virtual controller would be loaded on any of the consumers that want to actually use that space. So the resource controller is what kind of forms the grid, takes mm-hmm. that JBOD storage inside of those hyper-converged appliances, and the virtual controller is what we would use to actually consume it.
So does that handle like multipathing and path down scenarios?
Yep.
And
Yeah, so we in a typical design, a good storage design, you want to have your own storage network.
Right.
We run everything over 10 gigabyte.
Okay.
And so you want to do the same thing, right?
Okay.
All right, so let's get back to the demo. Let's actually provision a volume, okay? So I want to show you how easy this is. And so what we'll do is we'll simply just right-click on one of my vPools. Notice how I have the three default ones that are created, and those are based on those QoS priorities that I was showing you earlier. We're just going to go ahead and create this in the gold pool. It doesn't really matter where it goes. And so once I take and I create this, I'm just going to go ahead and give this a name. I'm just going to say, I'm going to call this Clint001, just so that we can actually identify that with a name. Okay. And where I'm going to present this to is I'm going to present this to my local Hyper-V host. So I'm just going to show the process of just attaching this to a standalone Hyper-V host server to start with.
Okay.
And I'm just going to give this a size of like 50 gigs or something like that. Okay. Go ahead and click next. Now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to select ViaGrid 01. I better actually make sure that I'm on ViaGrid 01, because sometimes I don't really remember where I am in my environment. I do apologize for the lag, because I am logged in a little bit remotely here. And so, yeah, so I'm on ViaGrid 01, so that's good. And I'm going to go ahead and click Next. And I would like you to pick a drive letter for me here, Clint.
Let's go with M for MVP.
All right, sounds good. And would you like to format that with NTFS or REFS? So you can see that we support both. So we'll just choose NTFS, just for argument's sake.
So and whenever Windows Server 2016 comes out in the
fully
new...
Supported.
The support for REFS with the zero byte writes and the things that Ben showed off at VMon last week.
Yep.
That's going to be pretty bad.
Pretty bad ass. Not pretty bad. I don't know if I'm actually allowed to say that on Channel 9, but we won't edit that out. Hopefully nobody catches that. So then I'll just go ahead and I'll click Create here. After I click Create, what'll happen is that we'll see a job that's spinning up. So on the top right-hand corner, we'll see a notification that'll show up. And if I come over to my Jobs window, you'll see three jobs that are happening here. Number one is, we say, creating vStore Clint 001. Mm-hmm. That's carving out the space on the software-defined grid. Then we see adding vStore to masking set. Now, this is really, really important, Clint, because the adding vStore to masking set is where all of the access lists are being formed. So this is what's locking that into this particular node itself. And then we see the last step of formatting. But before we can get to formatting, I would have had to go into disk part, initialize, online, and prepare that disk.
Right. So all of
that happens for us automatically. So if I take a look and I come back to my Windows Explorer here,
there, we can see in the corner that we just got a notification.
And I don't remember what drive letter you'd create that was M. So you can see how M doesn't exist in here yet. And the only reason M doesn't exist yet, and you can see I may have demoed a few times in this box already and not cleaned it up. So, and you can see that right now I'm just actually adding this vStore to the masking set. So this will just take a moment. And then once it's formatted, I'll actually just be able to go into Windows Explorer. Now, I want you to just step back for a second and just kind of review what it is that I've done here, Clint, because that means that I can actually, through the process of the virtual controller, I can actually attach these volumes headless without going to any of the servers. So the next demo that I'm going to show you here, and let's just actually go make sure that that volume shows up. So we had a drive letter M, and there's your...
There it is.
Now, if that was a remote server, that would actually be there. That disk is presented.
Okay.
You don't have to do anything. Four clicks and you're good. And that's...
You could actually probably have checked off multiple. You did it on a standalone Hyper-V host. If you were to do that on multiple Hyper-V hosts, now it's a scalable solution.
Now you're actually seeing where I'm going with this. Because, you know, okay, that's cute that we actually do that on a single host. But now what happens when we have a Hyper-V failover cluster? Because doing that same activity to a Hyper-V or to a failover cluster in Windows, mm-hmm. there's more work to be done there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because yeah. I need to know what those WWNs are. I need to know what those IQNs are. And then if I have to add another host into the cluster and I want to extend that drive so that it can actually span across, there can be a significant amount of work there. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the exact same demo for you, Clint, but this time what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually attach this to my two-node Hyper-V cluster that we've got. So hopefully my demo environment comes back here, and looks like I've lost some connectivity here. Hold on one sec. So Clint, what did you think about that so far while I'm trying to get back in here?
It was a pretty amazing demo, you know, just to show how fast and easy. So you didn't have to go into disk manager. You didn't have to worry about formatting any disks. You didn't have to worry about anything, right? It was pretty simple, pretty quick, pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and so I think it's just, it's a great UI. It's a great interface. Hold on.
You know, one thing about the user interface you bring up is it actually looked a lot like Server Manager. Right, so something that folks are already traditionally familiar with.
I'm back.
So now we can actually jump back to the demo lab and show what this looks like in a failover cluster.
Absolutely.
All right.
So, okay, so we're just back into our UI, and I'm just going to minimize this. I'm just going to pull up my failover cluster manager here, and inside of my failover cluster manager, I just want to show you that I've got two nodes. So the two nodes that I've got in my failover cluster manager, and this could be many nodes in here. It could be four nodes, 16, 64 nodes for all we care. Right. So everything I show you is just quantitative to scale. So I only have two to show you in this particular example.
Are there any limitations for the grid on how many nodes it could handle? Or?
No, the grid itself doesn't rely on failover clustering to form. It actually runs its own quorum and its own clustering inside.
Okay.
And it scales to 256 nodes. So on top, the actual scalability of the grid, we max out at about 256 nodes on
top. Whereas actually Hyper-V maxes out at 64 nodes.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, and that's where the hyper-converged discussion comes in, because you're kind of layering your storage and you're layering your compute on top in the same layer. Right. We're just really trying to get a small footprint in the data center, as small as possible, right? Okay, so let's go ahead and let's minimize failover cluster manager, and we'll come back to my vpools. We'll right-click and say new vstore again, same demo that we just did. This time we're going to call this Clint CSV01. What's your favorite number, Clint?
16.
So we're going to give a 16 gig CSV volume. Okay, click next. And so I see if you can handle this. What will we do? You've never seen the UI before. So what do you think we would do?
We're going to check off our two Hyper-V hosts that are part of the failover cluster.
Okay, so ViaGrid 02 and ViaGrid 03.
So you have to pick the Hyper-V host. You wouldn't pick the namespace of the actual cluster name?
Nope.
Okay.
No, and it'll just show up as an available cluster disk. So when these disks are presented inside of Windows, these don't show up as an iSCSI disk. These actually show up as a raw SCSI block device.
Got it.
So that happens through our virtual controller. And so this time, the only difference is when you present this to a cluster is we're just not going to have to actually give it a drive letter, because we use a concept called mount points for our cluster shared volumes. Yeah. So there's no point in actually giving it a drive letter here.
C cluster storage.
Okay, and then so I'll go ahead and click next and create. And now when I go down to my jobs window, the only thing that's going to be different inside of my jobs window here is notice how I have two masking sets now.
So it's doing it on both.
Exactly. Nodes. Because what it has to do is it has to prepare the disk on both of those, and which is great because you're actually never missing any steps here. So this is just going to take a moment to actually complete. So it gives us a chance to chat about this a little bit. What do you think? Like, what's your initial impression of that? Because Clint wanted to see this, right? And I said, you know what? Let's actually show this to everybody.
Right.
Because I'd been talking about a lot of the work that I'd been doing with the hyper-converged infrastructure.
Yep.
I'm lucky enough because I have access to a demo rig like this.
You do. And I'm actually, so my Hyper-V lab environment that I have, you know, back at my day job, which is working for Veeam Software as a Microsoft evangelist, I think I might actually ask GridStore to see if we can't get any demo equipment.
That would be a great idea. Yeah.
You know,
actually show this off.
It's pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's fast, it's easy, it's my compute, it's my storage, it's everything all in one. What more could you ask for?
Well, and the density that we get on this, so we've got another demo rig that we've got that we do for our VDI testing, so that
sure.
we get customers to come in and actually test their and model their VDI environments.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a four-node configuration, the same as this. The only difference is that in that configuration, that one there just has a little bit more memory and CPU available to us. And we're able to deliver over 600 plus virtual machines in a four-node configuration.
Wow.
In various iterations. So
yeah.
So that thing, that unit that we have in Mountain View just churns. It just like deletes all the VMs. It like spins up and provisions all the new VMs.
So it's a pretty beefy guy.
Yeah, and so we use that for our login VSI testing so that we can actually benchmark how long all of this stuff takes.
Right.
And our performance metrics and statistics that we've been having out of that have just been absolutely phenomenal.
So then you can actually simulate what real user workloads are like.
Yeah,
in
for
VDI
sure.
environment.
So I just pop back into the demo environment, Clint. We can see that the jobs are successfully completed here. And the last thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to open up Failover Cluster Manager, come over to Disks. I'm just going to click on Add Disk. I'll see that my 16 gig drive is now available for me. And then the last step that I have, if I scroll down here, we'll see this as an available storage, is I just have to add that to Cluster Shared Volumes. Now, if you don't like those last two steps, if you're not a real click person, you can actually do this through System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and we take care of those last two clicks for you.
Oh, okay.
So I joke with the engineering team all the time. I'm like, so our integration with VMM is basically you completing two clicks. And so that's pretty much it for the quick little demo that I've got. What did you think? What are your thoughts of that, Clint?
It's good. I mean, it's cool. So what are like the CPU memory setups on the actual Hyper-V nodes? Is that configurable?
It is configurable,
on
yeah.
What
so,
user wants or needs?
Yep. So we have entry level units that they're all Intel processors. So
mm-hmm.
we can start with a 2620 processor, scale up through a 2640 or 90.
Mm-hmm.
And soon, like as the 2699s and the latest generation stuff starts becoming available, GridStore will skew that up.
Okay.
It just has to go through their engineering to make
right,
sure
they
that
need to
everything's
make sure
done.
They vet it out and do regression testing and all that.
Each of the nodes can take actually up to 1 terabyte of RAM. It's so cost prohibitive to use those big RAM sticks
yeah.
that you're really your cross price point. You probably want to max
right,
those out at about 512.
You reach the point of diminishing return, right? You have to look at the the cost and yeah. So
and so so what you have is in from a memory perspective in a 2U block, we call it a block. A 2U block is like four nodes in 2U. Okay. In a 2U block, you would have up to basically 2 terabytes. Mm-hmm. It technically could go to 4, but like I said, it's not really, there's not, the value's not there. Mm-hmm. And in today's generation of SSDs with the 384s that are available commercially today that we ship, you can get over 90 terabytes of raw solid 90. State. 90 terabytes raw.
So yep. What's that turn out to be usable? What's the RAID configuration?
So it's not RAID. It's actually using inline erasure coding, if you guys are following a lot of the developments with Microsoft, Microsoft actually uses erasure coding in Azure.
Okay.
So this is not
new. I actually did not know that.
This is not new technology, and they're actually baking in erasure coding into their storage spaces as well. So their new storage spaces mm-hmm. Direct, which is kind of Microsoft's version of this hyperconverged,
right.
They're actually moving to an erasure coding model because the problem with traditional 2- and 3-way mirrors is there's so much wasted space. And when I have an all-flash array like that,
I need to maximize. As much as because the cost per gigabyte, terabyte, mm-hmm. the performance, I need to make sure that I'm getting the most out of that.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, guys, I really hope that you've enjoyed our session that we have. It's kind of impromptu. You know, Clint was just talking to me about, you know, wanting to see this. And Clint, thank you again for joining us at Channel
Absolutely.
9.
Absolutely, Channel 9.
Interview with an MVP, guys. Just a quick little reminder. MVP hour.
Hashtag MVP hour. I was just going to say that.
Perfect. And when is it? When do we have our MVP hour?
Every other week on Monday, right?
Yep.
Is it not?
It is. Yep. And I think we may actually be having a live MVP hour
we're
coming.
We're going to have an MVP hour tweet up coming up here. I think it's the next session we have.
Could be, yeah. So stay tuned. We got a really exciting one that we're going to capture for you guys live, and
live.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Live. Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Now Clint's got to find the stop button.